accession number 9339, reel 6.
Mr. William Holbrook, reel 6. You were telling me about how you knew G.
Yes, well, I knew my daughter. Hands and overalls. Well, when he came to the regiment as a captain of my company, I knew that he was too smart for being a company commander. He's a man who should have a staff job. I realised that. He only stayed us about a fortnight and got appointed as a staff captain to one of the general headquarters. Divisional headquarters. Well, apparently, about 2 months during the Battle of Cambrai, when the Germans advanced there, the general staff, G and all the staff, kept the whole lot of the general staff. And while taking them back to the German lines, there was two Germans with fixed bayonets taking them back to the German lines. I'll carry an alpine stick, one of these sharp pointed sticks that they can sit on, always just carry one of those. And while going back, He attacked this German and struck right through him. Killed him, grabbed the other fellow's rifle and killed him, bayoneted him. And apparently, a party of German machine gun party, about a few 30 or 40 yards away, saw this and turned the machine gun on the He charged him, killed the three, and got the men back, got the general and shot back to the. Remarkable thing he did. And he got the Victoria Cross on that.
Besides thinking that G was a bright character, what did you think of him as a man?
I liked him, yes. Yes, I liked him. He got a certain amount of... He was a little bit too good for being in the ranks, as a private. He's an educated young chap, really. Well, of course, I knew he was older. Well, the fact came, I met him. When the war was over, he came to... put up for Parliament. He put up for North Woodies, MP for North Woodies, and got in Parliament. And while there, he was appointed Treasurer of the National Society of Prevention and Courtney of Children. He got that job, you see. And hadn't been on before, he embezzled the money. A man like him, the MP, embezzled the money and cleared off to Australia. Packed on and cleared off to Australia. Well, I didn't pick him up. But the last I heard of was when the present Queen, she had a parade of VCs in Hyde Park some 10 years ago, I suppose. And he came from Australia back again, and that's the last word of it. But then, as a matter of that character, they just steal funds from that and clear off. The MP and the VC and everything at his feet.
Can you remember about anything else about your period at the Isle of Wight before the war broke out?
Well, I remember that, nothing much else, I don't think. Just the ordinary routine of the firing of course and doing prayer. I didn't do the prayer, I fired my course and that, and I just had to help. When they were short of waiters in the officers' mess, because they're all army waiters there, you see, they called for me because I was up near them. I loved going. I wasn't a regular as a waiter. Some of the soldiers were. But if they were short, it was attached to the mess was attached to the colonel's house next to it. So all they could do is come and say, we did help them with waiter. And I said, yeah, I should love to do that. Go in and wait at the table, these officers, you know. So, we used to have a cook named, he was a French cook called Alphonse. We used to go and say, we had to go through from the kitchen to the officer's mess. We had to pass a passageway, you see. We used to take these things in. So, I remember one occasion we had a silver with grouse. And there's one left. Well, Alphonse, he'd grab anything that was left over. He would. To use again to charge them. So what we did, we should have a couple of those up in the passageway, and I'm on this little train, I go back, there's one grouse on this silver tray, dumpish, and the fellow caught it, and get off it with it, just went back, empty his tray, went over, we had this grouse between us. The colonel had an inspection, all Alphonse used to put his meat pies and his fruit pies out of the window, sit and cool after he cooked them, and we used to pinch them, we didn't have, we knew where we were putting them, we used to creep them, pinch them. But anyway, The colonel had an inspection of the kitchen, though, where they saw anything untidy or dirty, inspection, and found old Alfonso's boots in the oven. The boy's got the sack. We should all meet him. You say, Alphonse, Frenchman. You say, Alphonse, he say, yeah. Waterloo, he say, Waterloo. Oh, he's got a mile. So I got rid of him.
What was it like in the mess when you were serving?
I know one occasion they wanted me to come out and me and I to put on the white shirt, you see, and I couldn't find any cuffs. See, the colonel wasn't there. Because I went in the bedroom, took some gold cuffs from his shirt, white shirt, and put, there's a fusilier cuff, the fusilier's badge on, you see, put them in my white shirt. I went and waited. So after about an hour, I came back and said to this, and he came and said, see my cufflinks anywhere? He said, I can't find them in that white shirt. So he looked at me, I knew he could see them. I said, are they there? Like, I think they're there. So he said, I'll go and look. And I quickly took mine up with the minis, you see. I said, there they are, so I found them. Well, I knew that when he'd seen them, but didn't say anything.
Was it very traditional in the officer's mess, from what you could see?
Yes. They always, first thing they did was play the national anthem, of course, and then they'd play various. There'd be a band there all the time, and military music and things like that, till they just come home. Some of the younger officers got a little bit too much to drink, and. But the other one, the older one, didn't. So it's all. And he didn't drink much of Colonel. We were told about the whiskey. Well, they were trying to whisky was there. A box of whiskey. Sir John Dewar sent him. And he never touched that. Well, I wonder what happened to that. Then when the person bought 10 bottles instead of 12.
Could you tell that story then, since it started?
Yes, well, Sir John Dewar was a great friend of the Colonel's, another whiskey man. Come quite a lot, and I got to know him, and he said he wanted me to go to when the war was over. He got in touch with me, go to the Congress. So Don Dewar, he's a single man, and I just began to realise about homosexuals. I didn't know much about it at all, and I thought, well, I'm not going to have a man like him to Africa on my own. Some sense told me it wasn't right, so I didn't go. But he used to send, so he sent this case of whiskey to him. It was number 10. It's a special, special brand. You couldn't buy it. So this guy's coming in, and this been, and I'd had it for some months. He never touched it, and I'm going back. And one day, I used to have toothache a lot. In fact, I had got my toothache out in the army, and I had a razor toothache. So I was telling him, I said, I'd go in the barracks and sit and talk to them. And I said, they're up the house. I said, and I thought, and I said, oh, I've got to drop the spirits in that whiskey. So I'm like, that'll soon stop that. So I thought, what's in that bottle, those bottles? So when I got back, I took one out. I prized the ace with my bandit. There's all 12 bottles and straws. And I pulled one out and opened it and put some in a cup and put them on my teeth, like it. What did I like? I never tasted that before. And I thought, well, nice. So I had another drop. I did a little drink from it. And in the end, I emptied two bottles. But I filled them with water and put them back in the straws and put them back in the case. And now the genuine thing going on. So when war broke out, the curbs ended up from Shepherd's deposits in Newport, Isle of Wight. He said, to label all my stuff. He said, now, see to it, and everything you want to, and I'll see to it. You take a check on them, and this was it, yes. He said, and anything you've got, have your name put on, and my name as well. So he said, like, little things I had over the years, you see. So he said, I did, I put in boxes and things like that, and put his name on and my name on. And they all went to Shepherd's Wall down the Isle of Wight. Well, he got killed in it, and after the war was over, I've been over about 6 months or so. I thought, oh, I've got the things down. All my lovely boot brushes. I've still got them there. Boot brushes he bought for me and all things like that. You'd never see brushes like it today. Well, down the garage, beautiful brushes. And I had little nicks in, like I said, everybody pinched one, they were mine, you see. Anyway, I put all these things in and went and said, 6 months after the war was over, oh, there's some things of mine down at Shepherd's, Isle of Wight. Well, they still got them, so I wrote to them and asked them to explain where I was and who I was, and they sent their data back and said that they're still there. I said, how much away? I said, not a thing. They said, we're pleased that they came through the war to be intact, to hit Romford. I've been, so I'm one who bought all the other stuff that's bought by auction.
The Colonel's stuff?
Yes, I'm one who bought 10 12 bottles of whiskey and then got 2 bottles of water.
In that story, you mentioned you had toothache. Get for that in the army.
What sort of
treatment?
Oh, well, I can tell you about that. It was terrible. That was really. I was on Pradesh train. I was bad with it, and I was sorry. They come and said, "Well, look, you know, they were rusty, really, ATOs, did you know?" And not knocking about, but they were treating the rust all the talk. He said, "What's up with you?" He said, "So I've got toothache, sergeant." I was in bed. So he said, "You go out the middle of the officers up." He said, "When we finish parade, and see him." So we finished the parade, and about an hour later, over I go to the hut, and officer inside. So, "What's wrong?" I said, "I've got a toothache." So he said, "Right, open your mouth." He said, "Sit on that stool," and there's a stool, a round stool in there, back to it. And he said, hold on the bottom with your hand, like this, with your hand on the bottom. He said, "Now," he said, "there's an order, medical order inside it in the place at all." So he said, "Come on, push your shoulders down." He said, "What's it going to do with me? I've got all these questions, so I couldn't move." So this fellow came up to his shoulder and said, "Open your mouth," he said, and open your mouth, and he's going to put these forceps and nothing, cocaine, I guess, and nothing to ease the pain. And yanked these two teeth out. That's all right, he said. I did have a mouthwash, nothing. I went back to the back room, just pouring the blood from this. They've taken out for me just with nothing at all. I can even feel that now, the scrunching of the forceps in the flesh as you get them out. And I couldn't move because I was holding the. So that was. Those are toothache. I'll tell you another story about toothache too. This is in the army. I won't get to say what part. We were going up to a place called Dickie Pussy, he'd be sailing out one evening night. And there was in some houses in Dickie Pussy, little bit, is about 8-9 miles away from the front line. And we got to relieve another end that night. So to pass the time, just about summertime, pass the time away in the evening from about 7 or 10 when we thought. All of them was in his back garden, and there was a heap of, in the back garden I was in different houses, there was a heap of potatoes right in the corner at the end of the garden. So I said, "Yeah, let's have a game of cricket." So I've got the broom handle. I said, "No, I told you this." Got this broom handle, and this fellow was they picked up the cricket, like, only doing it before we up the line. And some fellow picked up half a brick, I didn't know, and threw that at me, and he hit the bottom of the broom handle and hit me right in the mouth, half a bit broken brick. He knocked all my front teeth out. I had two black eyes, all my teeth gone. I couldn't see on the ground then. I just see a little light on the ground, and all the teeth were broken, all hanging out. And of course, I finished. I tried to get them dust off blood. But I had to go to the line that night. I went to the trenches like that, with all my front teeth like that knocked out, off front stumps. And I could hardly, if there'd been an attack, I couldn't have seen, I couldn't see it, but I could have been able to find my rifle.
Did you get any treatment at all for that?
Not a bit.
Did they provide you with false teeth or anything?
Not a bit. Now, so I had these teeth. I couldn't eat properly. See all that good cheeks. They hurt me, a little bit bunched with stumps. And when I came home, the war was over. I did all the war like that. Of course, it didn't hurt me then. The pain had gone. When I came home, I went to East Ham to see a dentist there. So he said, "Could he give me some artificial teeth?" So he said, "You said, yeah, I remember he said to me, what the bloody hell has he done your teeth?" So I said, "I've never seen a mouth like it, little." I was telling him that. He said, "You've been, so you've been nearly 2 years with these teeth." I said, "Yes." He said, "I couldn't understand me." He said, "The strangest story I've ever heard," he said. So that's why I got my teeth there. He put his little stumps out. And so all my teeth, one pulled, I was knocked out.
You mentioned, while you were talking about Dua, that you were aware of homosexuality. Was there much of that going on in the barracks, or was it just something you've been told about?
I don't think so. I think it's what I've been told about. They'd be talking about amongst themselves. So I don't think that I knew about it. They were very strict about it. I found that after. I didn't know at the time. The sergeant would come in, they wouldn't down another person, another bed, anything like that, you know. Well, that's why they're very strict. They used to have in the barracks, they used to have a club, what called the Cork Club, this was. And every man, if he built this club, every man used to have a cork. And on the court was a little brass band with their arm on it, so you might be number 10 or number 8. So. And if you was challenged to show your cork, and you hadn't got it, a penny. But not in bed. You couldn't catch you in bed. But soon as I met Javier, so as fellas, they chat, "Hey, meet you out the road, show us your cork." And if you couldn't produce your cork, a penny. See? What they were doing in the barracks, fellas being up early, someone, or whatever they were, you know, and they went to tell the fellow got out of bed, the rest of them, "Show us your cork." He's out of bed. because he ain't got it on him. And then, but then he just goes, let's get the money from the bank like that. Let this court blood.
Did the money all go to a central fund then?
Oh no, a bunch of themselves. They bought all things from themselves at the barracks. Yeah, see.
Were you in that club?
Yeah, oh yeah. So we had it on it. All the money on the bank was in that. But used to do, quick, some art was quick as light, I would say. Cheshire Club. See, in the concert hall, you couldn't get your chairs and get your pocket because you ain't got them on.
Yeah. Is there anything else you can remember about barrack life?
No, not great. I don't think we had just the ordinary parades, and there was so much happening that it was all in the mix. You know, so it was nothing. I suppose there are ones I should be able to think of, but you can't always think of those at the moment. I often think of these things when you're gone. You see, that I did last night a laugh. I thought myself. I did that. Oh, I thought about Cody after you'd gone. What about him? And all the various people like that. We're quite nice lot of fellows. Those all cockney, but they're good. You know, be no, if they saw one for the upset the money and sort of, they'd be after me. They'd protect one, protect the other. There's no bullying that goes on. There's not a bit of bullying amongst the sergeant, no one.
Did you see war approaching, or did it come as a surprise? Do you think there'd be a war, as you know, between
1910? No. I think that's all, but when the, of course, it's in the Isle of Wight where we, the men got called up, like the reservists, and I was in the Isle of Wight, so before we went to France, they were come, the men that were in the battalion before the war, reservists, were called up within a day, you see, as soon as the war was declared.
Before we come to that, what can you remember about how you heard that war was declared, and what did you think when you found out?
Well, it was obvious for some time, but I don't think that I didn't really know much about it. I remember seeing the colonel, because I was really in the end, he got some, and he writing on sheets of foolscap paper, and he put them on the ground, and he finished them, you see. They stayed there until he came back to dinner at night. Of course, I didn't know he was to read these things, and I remember one occasion, he got on it, this first I knew about the war, he said, the British government, I always remember this. The British government has warned Germany that on no consideration will she allow German battleships to go through the Straits of Dover and attack the coast of France. But anyway, I saw that as official that was. I said that was a message sent from the colonel. I don't think his name was Holbrook, Colonel Holbrook, the head of the Portsmouth Defences. He's someone that we've seen the Dardanelles. he was head of this one, and he sent the colonel out and told him that was the message was sent to the War Office. They wouldn't allow any German vessel, that before war was declared, to enter the Straits of Dover and attack the coast of France. Because when war was declared, it was different altogether.
What did you think when you found that you were at war?
Well, again, of course, I had a big...
What did you think? I mean, did you think that it would be a long war? Did you think you'd be involved in it?
Oh, no, they're going to be out there for Christmas. They always did that, but I didn't think that. I didn't think that, neither the troops. But I thought it'd be a war... of movement, like other wars would be. I didn't know about trenches and that sort of thing. But I thought then there'd be mostly machine guns and rifle fire and open fighting. I knew there'd be artillery fire, but I didn't think there'd be a heavy artillery. I thought field artillery and that sort of thing, but not... So I thought there'd be a war of movement. I did think that. I didn't think there'd be a static sort of trench warfare.
But you didn't think it would be over by Christmas?
I thought it'd take longer than that. I didn't think it'd last more than a year. I thought about the year I was just then.
Were you pleased to be at war?
Well, I like to see, I thought the adventure of it, yes. And when I went to the doctor, of course everybody had been examined.
Your medical examination, yeah.
And listen, he went under my, DAH, right underneath. So, when I asked him what it was, after he examined me, he said, it dissolved the action of the heart. Well, I did nothing wrong with me as far as I knew. So when I got back to the barracks, when the colonel came out at night, I said, I've been over the doctor, so I've seen his bark papers, DAH, dissolved out of the heart. He said, well, did you feel anything from it? I said, no, I don't think I didn't know anything about it. He said, I don't think I'll be able to go with you when you go to France. I think I'll keep me back. I said that. So he always remember came to me, he says, put his arm around me, and he said, do you want to go? I said, could I? He said, you'll go. And so I went. That was... absolutely wrong. Nothing wrong. Never had any trouble at all. Never. Never. That's but he was good like that, you see.
So that was cancelled and you were allowed to stay with your company in the battalion?
Yes, otherwise I might have been kept back for some months to go to some other regiment.
What happened when the reservists, you know, when the reservists arrived? How did they fit in?
Well, what do you mean?
When the reservists arrived.
Oh, I see.
How did they fit in?
Oh, they were odd sort of lots. You know, some were bus drivers and policemen and all sorts of people called up. There's a few dozens of them. But I always remember these men. I said, what's them? Because I was with the colonel. I could near see all this. And at a table. And these men, I can't all in civilian clothes, of course. They put their name, Brown, regiment. What battalion? 4th battalion, 6th battalion. Having been in the army and all that sort of thing. What are you doing now? Took all the predictors down before they issued out the khaki uniforms, you see. So this is the truth. People laugh and don't believe this. This is the truth. This fellow, there was a part of the officer. So I said, name? He said, Potzer. Have I ever told you this? He said, it's the truth. It's, I think I'm confident in there. He said, Potzer. So next one, I said, name? Phil Potzer. He said, Phil Potts. So the sergeant looked at him and thought, oh, you're having a game with Potzer and Phil Potts. So the sergeant looked at him and then the next one came up, he said, I suppose your blood is piss pot in this, he said. And so there was no sergeant, he said, Chambers. And that's the solid truth. Everybody roars. That's the truth. Now people would believe that was there. That's absolutely the truth. It's Potts, Phil Potts and Chambers. He said, I suppose your blood is piss pot in it. He said, no sergeant, it's Chambers.
How did these men fit in?
They all fit in. Well, because they're older, a lot older. Some of them in the 40s. But, They fit in all right.
There was no rivalry or trouble with them.
Oh no, like that. They did all they could to help. They were not so fit as we were, of course. I remember on the retreat from Mons, I've seen some of the fellas with their feet up their putties, and their feet bleeding through the putties.
How many joined your battalion? How many reservists were drafted in?
I should say it might be a couple of hundred.
And what strength did that bring you up to, about?
We were, being up to about 800 strong. So it was, might be more, really, but we had about 32 officers of men.
Were you still organised into the companies? Were you still in F Company?
Yes, I was just in F Company.
And that company organisation wasn't changed?
Made me into four companies after that.
When did that happen?
Just before these reserves come up. I was in A, B, C, D. I was in C, A, B, C, D. I was in the C company, A, B, C. Yes, I was in C company. Went from F to C. I joined two platoons together, so I made eight companies. There was four. But it had more men, of course. About 200 men in each company. And we went
through. Did that change in company organisation, did it affect you much?
No. They all fit in. You've got the same officers, you see. The officers in the F company went to C company and that sort of thing. So you knew them, and the sergeants and all that were the same, and you mixed with the others. But of course, you knew them together. You in the barrack room, you knew, and in the barracks, you knew one another. You knew what I knew all the officers, of course. I remember the name. There was the company's Mowbray Cole, Captain Mowbray Cole, Captain Winnie, Captain Bowden Smith, Captain King. I got the other one. That's the 4 and 5. And then there's Captain O'Donnell, the adjutant, Grisham, the medical officer, and there's a colonel called Marvel, the Major Ballack, and the other fellow, get his name there. It was the number, the routine, you see, of the number of the people there are.
Did you have any special training once these reservists joined you, before you went to France?
They did. They were on paper themselves. They were drilled by the regular sergeants for a few days, or a week, or fortnight or so, before they intermixed with the regular troops. Because those men, you see, some were, I suppose, the youngest of those men were over 30. See, they served 7 years in the army, and there was five of the reserves. Some of them, they were in their late 20s, early 30s. Most of them were from, and they were with the other. But so many come into each company.
It's at this time then that the colonel packed up his and your belongings, is it, and sent them off?
Yes. Well, I got these men to come up and boxed all his stuff up, and mine was with it. So see, all what I had was put in different boxes and labelled his name and mine. Mine on top, and his underneath. Well, I've got the brushing on the brushing, wonderful brushes, aren't they?
Yeah. Did you get Any special equipment issued to you before you went abroad?
Gas masks, yes. The Eversex, if they, not gas masks, Eversex. It's filled with different stuff, you know. You had your iron mesh in for a start, things like that. And then you'd have
what
your
was that?
Iron mesh was a box where it consisted of two thick pieces of chocolate in a tin, sealed tin. Sealed tin, where you put it. And you're not supposed to touch that unless you've been isolated 36 hours. If you've been away from, got away from the arrangement or isolated from them, couldn't get back to them to get food, you could open your iron mesh, which consisted of thick chocolate, plain chocolate, with little bits of meat in. Meat in the chocolate, so very thick chocolate. And that's what lasted, say, 24.
So then all you got was this chocolate mixed with meat? Was
yeah, with food.
Was there nothing, what else was in your
iron? Oh, we had biscuits, the only biscuits that got each day, that's corned beef. But that was a special, the iron mesh, and special.
What else were you issued?
I had a jackknife, what we called a jackknife, as a knife with about a dozen different parts of it, like a file and a hook to it, they put things out, and the blade of the knife and the sword, a little sword and things like that, you know, everything with that, so sorry. Then you was issued with your field dressing. It consisted of which you kept in your car, your little pocket inside your car, you kept
front
it
left
that.
Side.
Yes. And that consists of the bandage and the lint and bandage, you see, that you had to keep that. But then Haversack, you went in that action with what they called field service equipment, that was considered the Haversack. And then Haversack, it's your little things you might need, personal things, that's all, like for washing and that sort of thing, you carry that. It's all you took in with you, nothing else.
Did they give you any advice or booklets about France or Belgium when before you went out?
No. He issued a statement saying that you'll be going to a foreign company and all that sort of business, and they'll be looking up to you as you're British, and don't forget to treat their women with respect and all that sort of thing. Issued one of those. That's Kitchener. But the other stuff like Havlicks or nothing else. You had no. I think we had a water sheet for a short time. We sold, and I think because that got lost and destroyed. So you really, you went to the war with nothing but your iron ration, your field service dressing, and Eversack.